Monday, everybody, and welcome back to the Couchside Judges. I'm Scott Fontana. Follow me on Twitter at Scott_Fontana.
And I'm Dan Urban. Follow me at TheDanUrban. Follow the podcast at Couchside Judges. And make sure to read that scoring criteria.
Read every single word, nice and slow. Read it out loud if it's easier for you or better. Maybe it helps you remember.
It does help me remember.
Yeah.
Sometimes writing it.
You just copy it over.
Yeah, open it up and write it out.
Do it like Bart Simpson writing on the blackboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, from memory. And every time you miss, it's a point deduction. Actually, it's a hard warning.
Hard warning.
Hard
yes,
warning.
Please.
Every foul is a hard warning.
Hard warning or a pleading. Please stop doing this.
You know what? Look, I know what you're referring to. You're referring to Mark Goddard with the eye pokes in Max and Justin Gaethje. Look, I'm going to defend Mark Goddard on that because you can tell he's like, please don't make me take this point.
Yeah.
You guys are having a good fight. You guys are good fighters. Don't make me step in. Just fight. Stop poking him in the eye. And he's like, okay. Then he does it again. So look, maybe I'm being inconsistent here. Maybe I'm being hypocritical, but like, I don't know. I actually didn't want them to take a point there. Finally, by the way, and we're not even getting into all this stuff yet, but right before UFC 300, just what was it, like a day or two before, they announced that they're finally updating the gloves.
Yeah, I
did you see that?
I did see it. Are they Trevor Whitman's gloves? Do we know?
I mean, they're their own gloves. If they're Trevor Whitman's gloves, they'll never say.
I know, but he's the one who came up with the thing. Because I don't know if it's his doing.
My understanding is the only official line is that they got input from coaches and fighters and everybody, and that was kind of all it was. I never heard anyone necessarily say it's like, hey, this is just like the one Trevor Whitman was working on. Yeah. But I also haven't dug that deep into it, so maybe it is. But
you know what my input would have been?
What?
Tell the fighters to close their fist.
Well, that would be part of it, too.
Just close your fist.
I think the thinking is these might make it easier for them to keep their fists closed when they want to, so that hopefully it will work itself out. But I don't know about that.
All I'm saying is Joaquin Buckley jumped up my list.
What did he do?
He was on Ariel's show, and he said, just close your fist. I don't get it.
Well, yeah.
So.
And like I told you recently, your boy Jim Miller said, just start finding people.
Start finding,
and they won't do it anymore. Every time you lose like 20% of your purse or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Jim Miller, obviously UFC 300 was the Jim Miller show for you, my friend. I'm going to let you get whatever you need to say about Jim Miller out of your system before we get into the rest.
An awe-inspiring performance. Jim went out there, left it all in the cage like he always does.
He did. Absolutely did. He's a warrior. But can I point out, too, right in the final minute of that fight, and frankly, things are not going his way at this point, Bobby Green points in the middle of the cage hours before Max Holloway did it with 1 minute to go. Jim was backing up at this point just a little bit because he'd been hurt. And he sees that, and he wearily walks forward because he's like, all right, I'll do it. And he gets very badly hurt. And I'm like, oh, geez. That's why you got to do it in the last 10 seconds. That's what we learned. You got to wait till 10 seconds to do that.
Yeah, I am.
Especially if you're not up.
I am ready for the Joe Martinez show to take over.
Yes.
I mean, Buff did it. He didn't do that man justice. I know Jim's really not going to care. He's not going to blame him. I'm upset about that.
He might be rolling his eyes. I think that'd be reasonable.
Yeah, but he's not going to let it bother him, really.
No, I don't think
he's not, and he's not even going to
hold
it against
him. I think he lets just about everything roll off.
Yeah, he's not going to hold it against him. Maybe I will. It's UFC 300. There's never going to be another fighter like that that makes it spanning 12 years to each event.
I mean, he's still targeting, you know, probably 2 to 3 more if he can get to 50. He wants 50. So, he wants 50 UFC fights.
If he could redeem himself if he does it at his, you know, swan song. So
he won't. Why would he change his mind?
Because of my backlash.
Oh.
Anyway, I thought Jim fought good. He hurt Bobby a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm. In the first round.
And, I can't wait for him to...
And we have, by the way, we're going to talk about every single round of this fight.
We will.
Because there are two split rounds and then a unanimous 10-8. So every element of that fight is going to get broken down.
Honestly, going into a Jim Miller fight, it's never win or lose. It's like Jim Miller's fighting. I'm super pumped for it.
I know you are.
So the result's almost meaningless at this point. Obviously, he should have fought Islam at this card.
Sure. Yeah, obviously. But, Islam is coming to Jersey.
Yeah.
You know, the cards are aligning. What if last minute, Dustin Poirier cannot make weight? And Jim's just standing there being like, hey, man, I just happened to make the weight cut down. I could step in.
I think Islam would duck him.
Well, there's probably it's a different backup fighter.
It's weird how MMA works out, because Jim would definitely fight Islam better than Bobby Green fought Islam on short notice.
He probably would. But, so that's
it's weird.
That's
how
the
MMA
thing about
is.
MMA math. Like, it doesn't really work. Funny enough, the first person who I ever heard talk about MMA math, you know who it was?
Who?
Jim Miller. Yeah, that's where I learned the term from. I learned the term from Jim at AMA. Just being around him one of those days. Yeah. And actually, I think it was during an interview. He was saying, because I was asking him, God, there's no way I remember the question, but it was more or less like about one opponent and then another opponent. He's like, look, MMA math doesn't work. So yeah, I learned it from Jim. That's funny enough. Anything else you need to say before, or can we go on for
the
rest of it?
No, we can move
on. Okay, good.
We got him later.
Yeah. No, we'll go back to Jim Miller, and Dan will probably have to not offer too much in the way of his opinion, because he's...
We'll see.
You know, hey, feel free. I'd love to hear how this goes, but anyway, we got some fascinating things came off of the weekend, of course. UFC 300, the giant mega card, stacked to the gills. You know, everyone was, you know, wringing their hands that, oh, we don't have that, like, that fight that just puts it over the top, right? There wasn't really one fight that everyone went in and like, this is, you can't miss it for this fight.
Mm-hmm.
UFC went with the whole, oh, any of these fights could be a main event or a five rounder or something like that. And you know, you can, I would say most of them are could qualify for that. I don't know that Diego Lopez versus Sadiq Youssef would have been the most attractive of even UFC Apex main events. Co-main, sure. As far as co-mains go. Anyway, not the point. The point I'm really trying to build to is the fact that this card really was stacked to the gills, and it delivered.
It delivered. In one sense, it didn't.
What's the one sense?
The one sense it didn't deliver is that all these, as you mentioned, could be main event fights.
Yeah.
At some point, and they don't get the five rounds yet.
Yes.
Just because we're at the apex and you're considered the main event, you know, Jairzinho, Rozenstruik, and Gaethje is a main event and they get five rounds. There's no need for that fight being five rounds.
Well, we know my thoughts on heavyweights anyway.
Yeah. But that's my point. Fights like that are getting top billing on an apex card just because they're placed in that, you know, card placement. When, you know, Charles Oliveira and Arman Tsarukyan should have definitely been five rounds. Like, and that's a fight that advances that division incredibly.
Dan,
it means so much.
That also reminds me, were there any heavyweight fights on this card?
There wasn't, thank
you. Is that right? Interesting. No wonder this was a good card. Fascinating.
But if there was a heavyweight fight, it probably would have been top of the heap that were fighting at it. So
I think it would be fascinating for the UFC to go a different route with some of their main cards, especially for pay-per-views in the future. Rather than putting five fights on, or even they used to do six, right, occasionally.
Mm.
They were trying it out. It was like somewhere like 12 years ago they stopped doing it. But rather than having to get to five, what if they just did like three, maybe four tops, and they're all five rounders? Stack them, because now the door's open for non-title, non-main event five round fights. There's no limit to this. It's not like someone's gonna be like, all right, you get one.
Yeah,
they've already opened the door. So what is to say they couldn't do that more often? I think it would be a lot smarter to build their main cards with three or four fights, all meaningful, all five round affairs, potentially. You know, trim the fat. You don't have to do five fights. Like, I know you're a big Bo Nickel guy.
He didn't need to be on the main
card.
He
didn't need to be on the main card. And realistically, you could have just moved him down and you could have made four fights as five rounders, right? That
exactly.
would have served what you were doing to get to that. Other fights certainly could have been five round affairs too.
For sure.
But this particular fight you brought up, Tsarukyan and Oliveira, that really was not only a competitive fight, a close fight, could have used those two extra rounds, but it's because it was to determine the major direction of where the next challenger could come from. And it stopped and gave a setback to Charles Oliveira, who's very realistically could have won that fight. I have thoughts on that. We'll talk about the split decision when we get to contested rounds. But I would love to see a little bit more of that. I want to see if the UFC is ever going to start experimenting with that kind of thing. They've been very set in their ways with so many different things for such a long time. But I feel like I'm starting to see here and there little bits of experimentation. You know, the fact that they've done non-title 5-round non-main event fights now, that's mm-hmm. something in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Pretty rare, though.
I don't know that it needs to be a unicorn, but I'm okay with it not being, like, abused. That's fine, you know?
More numbered events, pay-per-views, 5 rounds, less at the Apex.
Well, yeah.
Fight nights being 5 rounds, unless they mean something.
Sure. But yeah, like, I don't know. I'd be curious to see how that goes. But, you know, we have what we have, obviously, with 300. And 300, again, really delivered. Your absolutely valid gripe mm-hmm. aside, because even during the broadcast, that brought us several times, like, man, imagine if this was a 5-rounder. And it's like, well, yeah, it was by design you did this so that it wouldn't be a 5-rounder. You wanted it to be a 3-rounder. But not that they are the ones in charge, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, otherwise, I mean, the action delivered. There were, for you know, sure. It's not that everything went without a hitch, but like there was so many like Dana said afterward, he's like, I sell holy, you know, ish moments, which is more or less true, except when he says that soundbite and then 5 minutes later says, oh yeah, I wouldn't want to do Pereira against Tom Aspinall at heavyweight. I just don't like that fight. But then he offers nothing for any of them to do next, especially at heavyweight. It's like there's no direction for the heavy division. You want a holy ass moment, you got to do something with your interesting, young, talented, knockout centric English heavyweight interim champion. There's no plan. If there is, they're not saying it.
For a gambling man, Dana doesn't like to take risks in that regard.
I think he used to.
He's like, he's like, I don't want to kill off Pereira yet. I don't know. And I think that's where
it was. I'm not convinced it would.
Or maybe
if, I don't know which one of them wins. And that's why I actually kind of like it, dude. Like, I'm fine. Pereira could keep fighting at 205. That's fine. There's still stuff to do there. You know, he actually mentioned he was more interested in Ankalaev than he was in a rematch against Prochazka, which is cool to hear because most people look at that and say, well, that's a style matchup that doesn't work well for you. He's been fighting strikers forever. Let's see how he does against someone who's not a striker. It's like, hey, he wants that. He's okay with that.
Mm.
So I like that he's good with that.
You know, with that large man of Glover Teixeira and Plinio Cruz in your corner.
Plinio's not a small guy.
He's a big guy. Can you imagine? All right, we're going to just do mount for now, for today. 5 rounds of me mounting you.
Yeah. Plinio used to fight a lot smaller, you know.
Yeah.
You remember those days?
He's now in the super heavyweight.
That's character. Okay. Hey. So is Matt Serra.
Yes.
Look, things happen. I'm moving up that way. I don't know if he's super heavyweight, but let's say I'm above my the 159 okay. and a half that I made for the Naga
All right.
Grappling tournament a bunch of years back. I wouldn't make that weight today. To be generous to myself. But anyway, speaking of Pereira especially, it really just is amazing how much he has accomplished so quickly in this sport. Mm-hmm. He really didn't do anything in MMA for most of his career as an MMA fighter because he was basically just a part-time, you know, moonlighting in the sport.
Yeah.
Finally focuses on it, and he just keeps on beating champions and champions and champions. It's 5 fights in a row he's beaten mm-hmm. someone who either was the champion, will become the champion, or was currently the champion that he took the belt from. It's crazy. Yeah,
impressive.
It's really impressive. Do you have a preference, by the way, Ankalaev or Aspinall? Who did you? Yeah. What do you want next?
Tom Aspinall in 3
That's
weeks.
That's the one you want. Okay.
yes, in 3 weeks.
I don't think actually that. I think he's probably just having fun with it. I don't think he really was.
Honestly,
I think he would love to fight in Brazil, but I think he also like he actually did hurt his foot or something like that. So like he's not going to do it.
Like if he beats Tom Aspinall, takes the interim belt. And then we get Pereira and Jones. I think at this point that could be that's on the level of Ngannou Jones. If he could beat Tom Aspinall
under the scenario that you've outlined, where Pereira is the light heavyweight champion who moves up and defeats the interim heavyweight champion to become not just a simultaneous 2-division champion, but also the UFC's first 3-division champion mm-hmm. ever. If John Jones doesn't take that fight, I don't care what his plan was. He will be a coward in most people's eyes. There is no way to look at that scenario and say anything other than he just doesn't want that fight.
Yeah.
Because that is the biggest fight that they can put on. Now, part of it is, of course, the money, right? Like, mm-hmm. these fighters, Sean Strickland's been talking lately about, you know, I don't ask who, I say how much. And I think that's a fair question. Mm-hmm. And will the UFC actually pony up for that kind of thing to make it happen? I don't know. Probably not. So that does allow at least one out for Jones. But I mean, that's you would have to make that fight. But there's steps that have to happen before that could happen, right?
Yeah, we could be talking about that in a month.
It would be fascinating. Especially because it is essentially the guy, Pereira, who finally brought total and utter control and balance to the light heavyweight division that we have not seen since John Jones left.
Mm-hmm.
Walked away from the belt basically the week we started doing this show four years ago.
Yeah.
And ever since then, it's just been chaos. This is the first time that belt has been defended against someone who actually was an active light heavyweight since Jones beat Reyes.
All right.
It's the first time someone beat somebody who's a regular light heavyweight and kept the belt that they walked in with. It's crazy. So I think that there's just way too much fascinating to that. I love that scenario. But again, there's kind of steps before we can get too close to that, right?
Mm.
I'm fine with either way. I think it'd be great, but obviously Dana is incredibly against the idea of him going up to heavy.
Yeah, weird.
He doesn't want the fight.
Yeah.
I think he likes to say. I'm going to skip over the strawweight fight at the moment, the strawweight title fight at the moment. We'll come back to it. But, I almost wanted to lead the show with this because it was of holy-ish moments that Dana sells. This was the one. And he sold the opportunity for this to happen because mm-hmm. Max Holloway made this happen. This is easily the knockout of the year, I think. I have it as a question, but I feel like, why are we even talking about this? Like, as potential.
People are talking about this a knockout of all time.
It might be like the greatest knockout in mixed martial arts history. And the reason I say, I'm going to make the case for it. I'm going to make it right now.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say so, the reason I say this is actually the knockout of the sport is because everything about it represented what people gravitate to this sport for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think back to Griffin Bonner, right? It was the Rock'em Sock'em Robot stuff, mm-hmm. right? Now, those guys were sloppy most of that fight, right? It wasn't the greatest of technical displays,
mm-hmm.
but it was a lot of heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was everybody, they wanted it badly because they wanted that opportunity. They wanted all of that. This fight, Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje, yeah, they're fighting for the BMF belt, but like, whatever. It's just a trinket, right? Mm-hmm. It's a trophy that neither one of them needed to prove that they were a BMF.
Right.
They're not fighting in the middle of that cage because they want that belt. They're fighting that way because that's how they fight. That's what they want. Max Holloway is 10 seconds from winning that fight. He could lie down on the ground and just roll around like in convulsions.
Mm-hmm.
And he wins that fight.
Yeah.
He could have done the Caleb Starnes thing, and he wins that fight. But instead, he goes, no, I'm going to walk to the center. We're going to point right here. You're going to come over here, and we're going to do this. And Justin Gaethje obliges, and he just goes buck wild, and he gets the overhand right that just puts him totally to sleep, flat just to the mat.
Yeah,
face plant. One-hitter quitter.
That was
he is not a one-hitter quitter guy typically either. That's the thing about Max Holloway. He's death by a thousand cuts, right?
Well, he did hit him a lot.
I know he did.
Yeah.
But there's one shot that ended it.
Yeah.
One single solitary. Even by those standards, usually, Max might get a TKO or something like that where he really beats him. Coming off a really good performance against Korean Zombie, I should add.
Yeah.
Similar display of unusual power that we don't always see from Max. But he's moving up in weight for this one.
Mm-hmm.
He moved up 10 pounds. The only time we'd seen him do this in the UFC, he lost.
Mm-hmm.
He got picked apart by Dustin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje. Justin.
Dustin
Gaethje. Dustin.
Dustin Poirier.
Dustin Poirier. effing casual.
Which we watched together also. We watched that at
we
the
did
FanDuel.
Watch that. That's right. We did. I remember that fight. I remember where I was with you. But this fight, he just doesn't care. It's really just about, yo, we got to put it on the line and see what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. And he is so technical. Like, obviously, there's a little bit of wildness going on in there, but there is very much still the kept technique in there. It was a nice overhand right,
mm-hmm.
you know? Wasn't just wild neck. It was, there was a tight enough loop on it where you're like, yo, he really got that. You know? Yeah.
It was
not just wailing without a care. It was beautiful. It represented everything that people want this sport to be. And it came with these two guys who both represent that, and they both did it, and they did it in that situation after a really good fight. It was already fight of the night, potentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you'd make a case for another fight. I think you make the case for both, Jim Miller and this one. But that put it over the top. That's why Max Holloway walked away with $600,000, two bonuses, which is kind of stinky because two of the four bonuses, I guess, went to Max Holloway. They didn't make more because they weren't going to. They don't have that in the budget.
Well, Dana said he was going to take care, make sure everyone left happy. I don't know what that means, but.
Dude, so talking with other fighters about this kind of thing. Left happy doesn't necessarily mean it has to be even a noteworthy fraction of the actual bonus figure. It could be $5,000, which is, hey, that's something. He didn't technically have to do it, right? It's considered a bonus, a gift, something that you don't necessarily are contractually obligated to. But, yeah. I mean, I don't know what Jim Miller got. I'm going to guess $6,000. I'm just going to put a number.
Okay.
Just going to guess six.
All right.
For your troubles. But anyway, this for me, this is the knockout of the sport.
Yeah, tremendous. You know? Absolutely.
I think
tremendous.
It just everything about it. I had the floor for a long time. I don't know if you have anything else to
No, I think you said it all. It was,
hey, I sorry was, to monopolize it, but I do that from time to time.
That was a moment where everyone jumps out of their seat.
Seriously. Joe Rogan even jumped out of the seat. He doesn't normally do that.
Mm-hmm. It was so unexpected. It's like, okay, these guys are gonna slug it out for the final 10 seconds, hug each other, and then be on their way.
Just insane. It was everything. I loved it. I still love it. I'm gonna love it for a while.
Oh, for sure.
As far as where this puts Max Holloway, you know, we've been talking for a while. At least I've been kind of pushing the narrative for a while. It's like, yo, if he beats Justin Gaethje, as I say it carefully to make sure I don't say Justin Poirier or Dustin Gaethje, I think casual. It doesn't sound like that's what he wants. He wants that featherweight belt. It has been a career-long obsession for Max to be the greatest featherweight of all time.
Right.
And I think he needs, in his own mind, to make sure he gets back on top to make that happen. Now, he's such a gentleman and respectful of his peers and everything, in the sense that he's saying, like, yo, I'm not going to leap Alexander Volkanovski for it, even to his own detriment, because if Volkanovski wins, he's not going to get that opportunity.
Right.
But he's saying, like, look, that's he's earned the right for the rematch, but if it's there for me, I'll take it.
I think Ilya is saying that also.
Well, it sounds like Topuria seems to think Max Holloway would be next.
He does, and
but who knows?
I noticed this when the camera showed him. He looked completely like...
A lot of people were talking about this, yeah.
Come on, I gotta fight this guy now? DC pointed it out, like, I mean, that could just be how he is.
That is what Max was saying.
So, who knows? I think Max would be favored, and how can he not be?
I think I'd favor Max, too.
So
it's slim. I think it'd be competitive. I think it'd be very interesting, but we've seen a whole lot more of Max Holloway weather storms like the one that potentially could be brought to him by Ilya Topuria. And Topuria started playing a little bit of MMA math, too, when he was breaking this down. He's like, oh, you know, talking about, oh, he went 90 minutes and couldn't finish Volkanovski, and I did it in two rounds. Like, bro, oh, you're tempting the gods. Yeah, the fight gods are not pleased. We'll see what happens. Going back to that women's strawweight fight, I know everyone tunes in for the judging, but we got to talk about this. We got so much to talk about from this. There was too much from the weekend, right? Zhong Wei Li gets the win. Weather's some real trouble there, though, but also has like several moments of just utter dominance.
Yeah.
Looked like she... There's that... This isn't really an adventure in officiating, but I'm curious what your thoughts were about the fact that it was the end of round one, where Zhong Wei Li has Yan Xiaonan in... What was the choke again? I forget what...
Rear naked.
Rear naked, that's right. My head was just... I just see her passing out. I can't remember why. Has her in the rear naked, and she is not quite out when the horn rings, as she's trying to hold out for dear life and basically just willing to go out,
mm-hmm.
which... I mean, I guess at that point, it's probably the right thing to do anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
maybe you'll make it to the bell and you're just going to go unconscious. They'll get you. But she kind of isn't there.
She's not
when there. It ends.
Yeah.
But she's also not there. You know what I mean? Like, there's the ending of Mirab Dvalishvili against, was it Ricky Simone?
Yeah.
That gets talked about all the time because it was at the final bell. And Mirab could not quite answer the bell. That was the problem there. This is a little different, right?
Yeah.
So how do you think about the way that was handled, that whole situation?
To be honest, I don't know.
Protocols and stuff.
I don't know exactly how that's supposed to be handled. I know that she woke up on her own, stood up on her own, was told which way to go.
But
which is normal.
Abnormal, exactly. Right.
And she went there, wobbly or not. And she's not wobbly from brain injury.
Right.
So John Gooden said he handled it right. I know John is good friends with Mark and Dan Hardy, who talk about this stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say he handled fine.
I'm going to correct you, though. His name is pronounced, I was asking GSP about this, Dan Hardy.
Oh, my bad.
Dan Hardy.
My bad.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go and say that they handled it fine.
I think it's fine. And for all, like, realistically, she is doing all those things on her own. That's really what it comes down to for me. I think it was handled well. It's not the whole, oh, she went on and fought well at certain times in the fight thereafter. That's not what it is. It's about what she did in that particular moment. And I think it's okay.
Yeah, honestly, I was expecting it to go to a draw.
I know. Fight. Yeah, that's right. You were saying that during the fight.
I was really expecting it. And then Wei Li found a second win.
Well, that's what a great fighter does. And look, Yan Xiaonan showed she is a good fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But Zhang Weili showed she is a great fighter.
Yep.
Once again, not the first time. She is a really incredible fighter and well on her way to being the greatest strawweight of all time. She's not quite there yet. She's got a little bit more work to do, but she is close. She's starting to pile up some real wins here.
She's one behind Joanna.
And she's beat Joanna two times, too, by the way. And it's also at a more evolved point in the sport.
Okay.
In women's MMA, too. It grows exponentially year over year. And this was 10 years ago, pretty much, that Joanna was reigning, right?
Mm.
I'm impressed with her. What do you think should be next for her?
Tatiana Suarez.
I would say so.
So, that's it.
Is there an alternative? I guess that's the real question. I don't know that there really 115? Is one. I mean,
you're not going to give her Marina Rodriguez. Or no, Jessica Andrade.
Jessica Andrade one.
Yeah, so yeah. You're not going to give her Jessica Andrade.
I don't think it's quite the time, but like she's probably not that far off. And look, it's a rematch. I think there's some interest there in the sense. But yeah, that's like a not even a dark horse. It's just like we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the fight has to be Tatiana Suarez. That would be, I mean, if she could be Tatiana Suarez in that style that she brings to the table, that would be an amazing feather in her cap because I think that's a fascinating fight.
Yeah. It's a great fight. Like I told you that one day I had the UFC live on Fight Pass on just streaming.
Yeah.
And for some reason they just kept replaying Tatiana Suarez versus can't even think of her name.
Oh.
You know who it is.
Sure, yeah. That one.
She was
the woman.
Yeah.
She weighs in 115 pounds.
She does. She was a champ. She beat Zhang Yonan in devastating fashion. Forget it, whatever. I can't think of her name.
That's all right.
Which is scary because I should know her name.
That's all right. You can see a doctor tomorrow.
All right, whatever.
We kind of brought up this already, the idea of Islam against Dustin in Newark, right? Armand Sarukian is now laying in wait. Do you like kind of this whole plan? Like, we didn't know where the next title fight was going to go. Realistically, if Justin Gaethje wins this fight at 300, it almost looks like, judging by the way they did it, it would have been a no-brainer that Gaethje would have been next.
Mm-hmm.
Because why wait if they already knew what was going to happen? I think they were waiting on the result of this fight. And they knew what was going to happen if A, and what would happen if B. And B happened.
Carlos Barza. Good thing your name.
Thank you. We've closed that loop.
Yeah.
Do you like this, though? Do you like the idea of Dustin Poirier, who basically just lost to Gaethje and now coming off of one win over Benoit Saint-Denis? Obviously a solid opponent, but maybe he wasn't quite ready for that level.
Yeah, they
are
said,
you good with it?
I'm fine with it.
I'm good with it, too.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they said that they had a few options.
And it sounded like this is what Makhachev wanted as well, which certainly plays a little bit of a role in it. It seems like it can be kind of tricky to get him in the cage.
Exactly, yeah. That's why he would never accept the fight versus Jim.
Maybe he would.
I don't think he would.
Maybe he would. Well, you think he's too scared. I understand.
Yeah.
but yeah, I think it's what's kind of good about this is that, okay, they're getting this out of the way in Newark, right, in June. In theory, that still does open up the possibility for Islam to fight again when they go to Abu Dhabi in October, presumably, as they tend to like to do. I think they do everything they can to get Makhachev fighting in Abu Dhabi. I think all parties are interested in doing that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that I imagine Sarukyan would be happy to fight in October for that fight. Have 5 months to prepare. Of course, potentially things change if Dustin Poirier finally gets over the hump, wins that belt. I don't think he'd be disinterested in fighting again that quickly, and maybe it would just be a rematch, which would throw a monkey wrench in. But, you know, there's obviously a billion permutations, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. We can't go over all of it. But as it is, I like the plan. I'm good with it. I think it's a nice headliner. Dustin Poirier does seem to like fighting out in this area.
Yeah.
You know, he's fought a bunch in New York now. I believe this will be his first fight in New Jersey. But I know he's been out to Jersey before. I want to say he did something at the Main Brothers gym one time. Because he checked. I don't know that he did. But I know that he checked in on social media one time, and he was in Rockaway. And I was, like, not far from Rockaway. Okay. I was like, yo, where you at?
I hope he answered.
No, he didn't. I didn't ask him. But in my head, I was like, what are you doing here? Stands to reason.
Exactly.
Anyway. Okay. I mentioned Bo Nickel before. He's your guy. I know you're interested to see where he goes, his trajectory, all this. Rate his performance against Cody Brundage.
Oh,
solid. Because he was hard on it.
He was hard on it because he didn't finish it quick.
Sure.
But he also wanted to get time under his belt.
He did.
Like, these guys that are, like they say, they're used to winning. They don't know what losing is. If it doesn't go perfect, they're going to be upset with it. I'm sure he's happy today.
I'm sure he's happy enough.
So,
and I'm sure he's able to find the things that are good in there.
I mean, he finished somebody.
And find reasons to work on. Exactly, right? Again, this I don't think this belongs on the main card. I think it would have been much better to just have it like be even the lead-in to the pay-per-view. I think they made the right choice making it Yuri and Rakic because that fight was fun too. Mm-hmm. But it would have been fine. You're guaranteed people are going to be watching this no matter what right before. They're going to turn it on, right?
Yes.
It's like maximum exposure. You put it there. Everyone sees it, and it, mission accomplished. And you can have the prestige of one of these other guys being on the main card where it really belongs. Then you have easily the most stacked main card that UFC has ever put on.
Mm-hmm.
They opted not to do that. Now, does it really matter? No, because they're still making the same money probably. But I think it would have been better if they did that way. But yeah, let me give him on a 10 scale, Bo Nickel. I'm going to rate him an 8.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That works.
Because I think there was a lot of thinking that he would walk through Cody Brundage. I think the line said a lot about that. It was like minus 1600 or something.
I mean, more or less did.
He did, but there was certainly more resistance than I think people anticipated there being is all I'm really getting at.
Okay.
You know, it was a dominant performance. Like, no question. But he didn't really truly walk through him. That's why he needed the second round.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at the list of middleweights,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of guys I see that he could beat.
Sure. But what I think this fight showed is that the UFC seems to know what they're doing with the pace that they're bringing Bo Nickel along at. He doesn't need to make that leap, right?
He doesn't have to, but I mean, I think he could beat Sean Strickland.
Yeah, but that's because you're looking at a potential, like, weakness in the matchup kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I think he could beat Izzy.
I don't know about that. I don't.
It's a question mark, but I think he has the tools to beat Izzy.
I think I'm okay with them bringing him along a little slower like this. I don't know when they start making leaps because they're not making leaps right now. They're making progressive steps.
Like, Brendan Allen scares me more than Sean Strickland or Israel Adesanya for a matchup with Bo Nickel.
Sure. I want to see how he does against someone with at least a little bit of takedown defense.
I'd like to see, maybe Anthony Hernandez.
That'd be interesting.
That's a good
fight. I like that fight. That's a good fight. Wait, but Hernandez has somebody, right?
Does he? I don't know.
I think he has an opponent right now. I think he's got somebody coming up, so he'd have to get through that fight. And I think if he loses that fight, you don't make the Bo Nickel fight. But we've delayed a lot these contested rounds, which are, you know, the bread and butter of the couchside judges. But
yeah.
Anything else you wanted to touch upon from 300 or from PFL before we kind of, you know, get into the unanimity report?
Not and PFL. The contested rounds? Davis and Figueroa, let's fast track this now. Like, I love Merab.
Just let him jump in, yeah.
I love Merab, and I want Merab next, but also the time is ticking, like the clock's ticking on Davison. Let's move this along.
It is, but I still think you do Merab next. I think there's I think the train is already on track.
Okay.
I think it has to happen next. Merab is doing everything he can to promote this fight in a fun way. Have you seen the videos he's been
making?
I've
seen some of them, yeah.
Do you see the one where he picks up the guy who looks like O'Malley and like literally carries him into the gym because he's been smoking too much? It's a good one. It's a good one. But it's funny. Like we're working on this. This is the fight that has to happen after that, and probably Figueiredo needs to pick up one more fight in the interim.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can do it. He's a former champion.
I just hope
absolutely fine with it.
It makes me hope that Max takes care of Topuria, so we get off this O'Malley Topuria like right away.
Yeah,
and then you make O'Malley stay at 135.
I'm very okay with that train going off the tracks because that one's still in the station and maybe we can just sabotage it now because I don't know how many people are really itching for it other than the two parties involved. Exactly. And really just O'Malley.
Yeah,
it's just O'Malley and his people, right? The only other thing I wanted to bring up, because we could go on and on, right? I will bring up PFL because this was a very fun event. Lot of finishes. There's literally 8 rounds that were scored out of 11
like
fights.
Sounds like a lot of finishes.
Ton of finishes. I know you didn't get to watch or didn't care to watch. I don't know what you pick your poison on that one.
I wasn't around.
You weren't around. Fair. But it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of good finishes. Just about, I think almost every, if not every, light heavyweight fight ended in the first round.
Okay.
Really good finishes. The reason I definitely want to bring this up, though, is for something that I shared on social media when I caught it. A lot of other people heard this, too. But after Rob Wilkinson gets his quick 6-point finish in 70 seconds there at the break, and I'm watching on the ESPN Plus feed, and as I've been complaining about on social media for basically like 2 years now, they're showing the in-arena feed, which is just a shot of the cage from a distance. And you're listening to whatever they're listening to in the arena. On this particular occasion, there's also a hot mic. So it's been going on this whole time. You're hearing mostly Sean O'Connell, your favorite, talking to a producer or to the people with him and everything. And it's usually just kind of innocuous stuff. And I had it on. And, I'm more just like, come on, just I would even take a commercial. This is a little boring. But at least the hot mic was like a little interesting. And then all of a sudden, between the finish and the point where they would have announced the decision, you catch Sean O'Connell talking about with the post-fight interview, should I ask him about the steroids? Where he got the steroids? And he's just, he's just making cracks, right? Wise cracks, as he eventually labeled what he did and apologized for later. But I'm like, dude, this is kind of why you don't hire an ex-fighter with no commentating experience to be your lead play-by-play guy, because he wasn't brought up and drilled into him, assume you're on the mic all the time, because you are. Yeah. And this is what happens. It's like, it's not like he didn't call anybody, like a racial slur or anything like that. He said a dumb thing. It was unprofessional. It was stupid. But like, it was also a totally unforced error.
Okay. All right. I mean, I got no issue with some candor here and there.
Sure. But like, he didn't mean for us to hear that.
Exactly.
So he didn't really, it wasn't candor. Something that he was trying to say to his buddy. Yeah. It was a joke.
That's what I meant when I say that. Scott, we know I don't use the right words, but people have learned to know what I mean when I say things.
Fair enough.
I did like when, because the fight you did make me watch, I ended up watching the second round too, just so I could see the finish.
Sure.
And then I waited after, and they were hot again.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, if we got to kill time, which you do because this is going on way too long, let's get Big John on to explain that stoppage because Patricio is going insane on
Keith
Peterson.
Yes,
right
there
now.
There was an extended conversation about this. Yeah.
So, and I agree. I thought it was a fight. He took how many shots before throwing a punch as Keith is stopping it?
Mm-hmm.
He's just getting beat up. It was a good stoppage.
Yeah.
Confirmed by John.
It was.
That's his realm.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Much more than even the judging, right?
Mm-hmm.
He helped write the rules, but he doesn't sit in the chair very often, and certainly doesn't anymore. But yeah. So it certainly his take on on officiating in the cage is welcome there. Mm-hmm. I think we've got to get to these rounds.
Let's get to the rounds.
For the unanimity report, which now I said two times correctly. Mm-hmm. I did not trip over my own words, even though I can't get Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier separated. they have formed into one super insane, crazy fighter. Boy, that'd be a I would love to watch a Justin Poirier fight. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me, like, Justin Gaethje kind of reminds me of, I don't know, Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Krang.
Like the tall.
The robot. Yeah, the body. Robot.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of okay. Looks like him.
I don't see it. from the unanimity report, now I failed it. PFL 2 had 7 out of 8 rounds unanimous. Not saying a whole lot. 87.5%. Good rate. Not a whole lot of opportunities anyway, but they did fine with it. And no 9-8 splits. UFC 300.
Mm-hmm.
20 out of 26 unanimous for a 76.9% rate. 2 out of those were 9-8 splits. So not a whole lot where they're disagreeing over the round winner. Although there were 2 split decisions, so we'll get into those. But hey, these things happen in MMA. Total, by the way, and this was all in Vegas, basically the same judges working the same 2 events, which is rare that we're going to have that scenario. 27 out of 34 for a 79.4% rate. Really great job on the whole over 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Some really big, well, one really big day and then one smaller day for the sport. So good job on the judges on the whole. Now let's tear them apart in the contested rounds. No, we're not going to do that. But I don't think anything was like bad on this. All right, we're not going to be.
I don't think
rolling around the floor screaming.
Nothing. Yeah, not really.
But so spoiler alert: you stuck this long, you may as well stick around. let's get
well,
to.
I don't think so.
What?
I mean, I have thoughts, but.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's yeah. It. I have thoughts too.
Yeah.
Sometimes, usually. Armand Sarukyan. Charles Oliveira, we already said this was a split decision. 29-28 all around. It all came down to round 3. Oliveira won the first. Sarukyan won the second. Let's get to this final round. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, it really didn't feel like it was going to be a close round. But then it does become one. One on the feet, it's close. I give a slight edge to Sarukyan. His jab was nice. Both guys had their offense. Some kicks. Good right hands from Oliveira. When Sarukyan does get it onto the ground, he goes straight to side control, gets to a crucifix. He lands a few elbows, nothing crazy heavy, but, you know, elbows nonetheless. A couple knees to the body when Oliveira turtles. He's kind of trying to get the back, but he's not really throwing any punches. He probably could have solidified the round had he done a little bit more punching here. But anyway, he ends up on his back and in a front headlock in a scramble from Oliveira, and he's working for a guillotine, and it takes him a little while, but he sinks in at Darsh with about like 25 seconds left, and for like 10 seconds he's really trying to finish. For some reason Sarukyan goes limp. I don't know if that was a defense, but he pops
my understanding
back up.
Is it actually is a defense. Yeah, so, I saw an exchange on social media that Luke Thomas was talking about this, and then Chris Curtis weighed in. He's like, yeah, I think he called this like the dead body defense or something like that. I forget what he called it, but yeah, more or less it's a thing some fighters do. Sure.
Okay. I mean, it's not a great visual, but still.
Yeah, no, it's a bad visual.
After this, Oliveira is just content to hold him there. Mm-hmm. And he's not really trying to finish. He's just like, I'm just going to ride this out to the end for the next 10 to 15 seconds.
I mean, what else would he do, you know, if he gave it up?
You know, I'm not saying give it up. I'm saying actually try to get him to sub him instead of just holding the position.
Maybe he knew he just wasn't there, you know.
Had Oliveira had Sarukyan struggling to escape, I'd probably say this is Oliveira's round, but... he didn't have that in my eyes, so it's a 10-9 Sarukyan for me.
I went the other way, and it was a really hard choice. I was not quite committed, because obviously I changed, but I thought Sarukyan had more or less kind of sewn up the round, and then there was the sequence at the end we just talked about.
Yeah.
And I think that more or less pushed me over to the other side, and it really, I think for most people, it's just going to come down to how far did you swing the pendulum back the other way because of what Oliveira did.
Which Joe Rogan pointed out correctly.
Yeah. Sometimes Joe says some really, really smart things. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes Joe, you know, talks.
The thing is that they were trying to say, oh, but, you know, what about the first round? If you did the first round this way, you should go to the third round this way. But it's like, but the first round, that sub attempt was incredibly more effective.
Joe, of all people, should understand the difference in the degrees of choke, the degrees of submission attempt.
I thought Sarukian's head was going to pop off.
Yeah. But yeah, this is really close. This could certainly go the other way. I did go the other way from you. I sided in the minority with Judge Mike Bell. You were on the same page as Judges Adelaide Byrd and Ron McCarthy.
All right.
No drama here. You know, people had their opinions, but I don't think anybody was going crazy one way or the other.
Yeah, no, there's nothing to go crazy over it. It was actually funny in the interview after. When Sarukian was like, "What? I don't understand."
I know.
He's like, yes. And then Joe's like, he explains to him. He's like, "It doesn't matter. I won."
Yeah, I know. I mean, that made me laugh pretty hard. That was good. I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. I forgot about that. Oh man. But again, this was not the only split decision on the card. We had another one earlier in the night. We brought this fight up before Jessica Andrade getting the win over Marina Rodriguez. All again, 29-20, it's all around. But this time it's round two that is our pendulum round, our swing round that decides the winner here. So yeah, talk about the middle frame.
Yeah, Rodriguez is landing really nicely throughout the round, almost picking an Andrade apart. Mm-hmm. Andrade landed some nice leg kicks early, but for some reason she stopped throwing them. She was throwing big, wild punches once in a while. A couple get through. At the end of the round, she starts landing some pretty decent shots, some bigger ones. You know, they're saying Rodriguez is hurt. Was she going to make it out of the round? I didn't quite see it that way. She's getting the clinch, and she's kneeing Andrade in the face. Like I said, I just don't think Rodriguez is that hurt. I think she did enough in the beginning of the round to keep the lead. 10-9 Rodriguez.
I think you're right. Rodriguez isn't like hurt. But also there's extended periods of this, like, kind of, I don't want to even call it a sequence. It's more or less like that period of the round where Andrade starts to come alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's extended periods of time within that Rodriguez just isn't doing anything. She's not putting up a good visual front. So if she's not hurt, she is not necessarily showing it in a way of being like in the fight anymore to the degree that she was previously. So I read that as Andrade is having a higher degree of success at this point.
Okay.
That's why I ended up sticking with Andrade here. But yeah, hey, that could go the other way. I totally respect you for going the other way on this one. I think both these two swing rounds and these two split decisions are very interesting because they really do come down to, hey, how much do you kind of weigh the late round success of the fighter who was really not winning most of the round?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, in both cases, I ended up going with the one who was doing better late. And in both cases, you went with the fighter who was doing better, not just early, but for probably even more time elapsed of the round. But in this case, I'm in the majority, you're in the minority, so that flipped. So this time I'm on the same page with Adelaide Byrd. Unlike you, we flip-flopped here. David Leatherby's also on my side. Derek Cleary, he saw it the same way as you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's wrong answers here. This is just great competitive fights, and this is the kind of thing that happens when you get really excellent fighters all on one card. I'm honestly surprised that there were so few split rounds on this whole card, because I believe that there is a higher propensity for there to be disagreement throughout a fight if the matchups are much better. I don't even think that's a controversial thing to say. I think that makes a lot of sense if most people would agree.
I agree. There should be more disagreement when they're very good. Both fighters are very good in a good matchup.
Not a lot of people really seem to understand. Right?
And also when both fighters are very bad on the same level.
that
can get crazy.
It's just about the parity in the matchmaking there, right? I think that's what it really comes down to. So no, I think that's at least in part a credit to the judges throughout this card doing a really good job.
They did great. Yeah, everyone's giving the fighter the praise. I think the judges did fantastic.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I think so too.
The fighters still deserve their praise though.
So. No, they deserve nothing. They deserve nothing. Don't even give them money. These fighters they should be fighting for minimum wage, and the minimum wage should be $5.
Be great if the UFC is like Judge of the Night, Sal D'Amato, $300,000. Be great.
That wouldn't necessarily be a good visual.
No, I guess not. But still, be fantastic. If you're a judge, that'd be fantastic.
I am sure Judge D'Amato would love that. In some ways, it might just mean the end for him because everyone would be like, no, we can't do it anymore. You've been poisoned.
Anyway. Fight of the night, score of the night.
Score of the night. Brought to you by, who's sponsoring that?
Probably Prime Hydration.
Prime Hydration. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It would be a company that doesn't already sponsor them. It would have to be something outside.
Okay.
I don't know who it would be.
Like Big Pets.
Timex.
Timex, okay.
I don't know. Whatever. That was our last split decision. Everything hereafter is rounds that don't really have any bearing. Not a ton of bearing on the result of the fight anyway. And that was starting with Kayla Harrison, who won in round two. Rear naked choke submission over Holly Holm in a fight that basically she just tooled her. I'm tempted to say at least part of this is like Holly Holm is old, because she just is. She's like 42 years old now, mm-hmm. I think. So to fight against a 31-year-old woman, a vicious, kind of grappling and attack-minded opponent in Kayla Harrison, it wasn't a good matchup, right? But it's still impressive because Kayla Harrison looked really fantastic throughout this fight.
Yeah.
Especially because what strikes is she allowed to throw now?
Elbows.
Elbows.
Yes.
Like regular MMA. Amazing, right?
What have we been doing?
Well, everyone else was doing the right thing until 2018. Anyway.
The World Series of Fighting allow elbows?
Yes. They changed it for PFL when they made the switch in total direction and everything like that. Anyway. We can't get sidetracked by that. I like things about PFL. I hate that. It's stupid. It's basically indefensible. I don't care what your defense is. I've never heard a good one from them. But anyway, round one of this fight is split. And not because we were wondering, hey, did Holly Holm win that round? It was like, yo, is this an eight? Mm-hmm. So break down why this may or may not be an eight.
What so this about? This was probably my most surprising that we're talking about.
Okay.
But it's probably just perspective from the cage side.
Sure.
I thought Harrison beats her up from top position for like 3.5 minutes. Tito Ortiz style.
Mm-hmm.
Elbows, like you mentioned. Big shot. She never passes the guard, really, aside from when she first took her down. And combined with Holly Holm's zero offense, outside of using her momentum after getting tossed like a rag doll.
Sure.
To get on top briefly.
How effective was that?
I like the eight. I think this is an eight. I think Mike Belmay just had a bad perspective, didn't really see how hard the shots were landing, and that's probably what it was.
So this is where I have a problem with Mike Bell. He's always putting down a nine. He just never pulls out that eight. What the heck? Someone needs to talk to Mike Bell and get him to say, listen, you can use the eight. It's okay. Obviously, longtime listeners know I'm being facetious here, but and that's not a shot at the whole thing about the Grasso and Shevchenko fight from last year. Obviously, that was a regrettable situation, I think, for probably all accounts, right? But Mike Bell, he, by the numbers, is the statistically most likely to be in the majority of an eight instead of a nine,
mm-hmm.
Of any judge. So I was stunned when I saw the name on this one as the nine. I was like, okay, sure, but... I'm with you. This is an eight. This is mm-hmm. a pretty darn good eight. And not just because it was a shutout of a round, but because Kayla Harrison really poured on some good offense in there too. I think all boxes are checked. We got damage, mm-hmm. we got dominance, we got duration. Literally the only thing Holly did again was that judo throw, which was a reversal basically, right? It was a reversal.
She got thrown and the momentum of Harrison got rolled over and she just went with it, ended mm-hmm. up on top briefly.
But yeah, that really
with no offense following.
It wasn't much of a damaging thing. It didn't lead to anything. So
no, she took all the damage from that throw.
She got so yeah, I don't yeah. This is an eight. Someone talk to Mike Bell. Teach him that you can pull the eight. It's okay. Derek Cleary and Sal D'Amato, they're experienced judges. I'm sure they'll talk to this new guy, Mike.
Yeah.
And let him know. again, that was the first of two 9-8s. We'll get to one in a little bit, but before we do, I wanted to go back to the Max Holloway fight once again, winning this fight over Justin Gaethje by round 5 knockout, last second right hand is what I'm putting the method mm-hmm. of victory as in all caps, by the way.
Yeah.
Round 2 was split because I was actually a little surprised, but not necessarily like, no, that it can't be. I just, in my head as I'm watching this fight, I'm like, I think this is pretty good 3-1. Max Holloway won the first three. Gaethje finally has a good round in round 4. Mm-hmm. But round 2 is where we're actually split. So let's talk about this. Why is this on the board?
I thought it was a pretty low output round from Gaethje.
Mm-hmm.
But his leg kicks are really good. Max's leg is terribly bruised.
Mm-hmm.
But Holloway is landing to the head, kicks to the body, good reactions. Just seems every time Max lands, it makes Gaethje reset. He's grabbing his nose. And right at the end, they have a nice exchange that Max definitely got the best of. And I think that really put the stamp on it for me. So I'm 10-9 Holloway.
Yeah, honestly, I feel pretty good about a Holloway around here. I don't really love the Gaethje scar. I understand he had the leg kicks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think in totality, it doesn't add. Junichiro Kamijo is a terrific judge.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while, there's a round that I very much cannot see his way. It does happen. I think this is maybe one of those.
Okay.
I don't really see it. You know, I see offense. It's not indefensible, but I think it's clear for Holloway.
Okay.
I actually do. Judges Derek Cleary and Sal D'Amato at least agreed on the same page as you and I, giving this one to Holloway. Yeah, I don't love it. It didn't matter. It wouldn't have mattered. Realistically, there's no way you could, even before those 10 seconds, if he does Caleb Starnes, this is also a Holloway round.
Yeah.
Without question, because he hurts Gaethje earlier, too.
Real quick, after Gaethje's nose is broken and he says that it's completely blocked,
mm-hmm.
can't breathe out.
Right at the end of round one.
I just kept thinking, I'm like, okay, I know this guy's super tough and he's going to fight through this. But tonight, when he goes to sleep, he has to sleep breathing through his mouth. And that drove me crazy.
Like, did you get anxiety?
Like, oh my God, I can't imagine having to do that. Like, the fight, whatever, he's going to fight through it.
Yeah.
He's in a fight. He probably doesn't even feel it that badly until it's touched. But that's going to be the worst part, is trying to go to sleep tonight. And it bothered me, like, a lot. But he's Justin Gaethje. He's built different, so.
You know, this is actually going to be a good segue, because when I was with Jim Miller that one day last month for the story I ended up writing on him, the subject of being punched in the face with a broken nose came up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's explaining at a fighter's perspective, listen, getting punched in the face doesn't hurt that much.
Mm-hmm.
Getting punched in a broken nose sucks.
Okay.
So, yes. Yeah. Confirmed. Not good. Not for anyone. No one likes getting punched in a broken nose.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But also, Justin Gaethje is built different.
Oh, way different. Yeah.
And Dustin Gaethje, I'm telling you, that dude is very different, dude. He's jumping Achilles. He's throwing hard leg kicks. It's a different world. How's his hot sauce? Oh, I'm sure it's fire.
Okay.
Yeah. whatever is the right pepper that they use in Arizona, that would be.
Okay.
I don't know. Is it cayenne or something? I don't know. I've never been to Arizona.
There is a pepper.
Yeah.
One of them.
The ghost pepper.
That's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My son is obsessed with the idea of a ghost pepper. He just thinks it's like, he doesn't know what it, like, he doesn't eat spicy food. He just has heard of the ghost pepper and thinks it's interesting.
All right.
There's nothing
that would
more
be quite,
that.
Quite the introduction to spicy food.
Yeah, he's not going to do that.
No, don't do that.
No, I wouldn't. I don't like spicy food, so it's not really, I don't know where his pathway is to eating spicy food. It's not for me. But I do bring up Jim Miller. At that time, not just because of what we were just talking about, but because he is next on deck. His fight against Bobby Green, which, sorry to say, Dan, you may be the only one who sees it this way, including Jim. He did not win this fight. Bobby Green gets the win on the scorecards, 30-25, 29-26, and 29-27, which means we've got scores, kind of a little over the map, and we actually have a unanimous 10-8 here, so it kind of builds... It kind of descends, I should say, really, for Jim Miller. In round one, we're talking about who won the round. Round two, we're talking about what degree Bobby Green won the round. And then by round three, we're talking about, is this a 10-7? So I don't know how much you're able to take yourself out and try to score this round, but can you at least set up the rounds for us, starting with one?
So it's impossible for me to score this fairly.
Okay.
I'll set that up.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it was a whole stand up battle this whole round.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Green talking his trash. I don't think that bothered Jim at all. I think he just
I doubt it
whatever.
Bothered him.
Like, because they were like, that's the key to Bobby Green's victory. I'm like, Jim's not going to care what this guy says.
That would be like, that's a real shame if they think that the key to victory for Bobby Green is his mouth, when he's got such really great hands.
So he was walking Jim down. Landing shots. He won the volume edge in this round.
Easily.
But Jim hurt him. Jim had him hurt. He landed the bigger shots, and in my bias, Jim won this. So I'm not even going to score it. I can't score it fairly. I thought Jim landed heavier impact. Bobby definitely had the volume. What are you going to do?
I think I can step back. Like, obviously, I've known Jim a very long time, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, like, I don't, safe to say, I don't hold him on the same pedestal that you do. So I think I could step out and look at it as just putting any sort of biases aside of just knowing this man and speaking to this man for a long time, and also having spent a lot of time with him earlier this year, you know? Excuse me. Jim Miller, I think, won this round, and I was very ready to give this one to Bobby Green as well. I had Jim up early. He stings him early, right? He has Bobby Green in trouble early. Bobby Green comes back and he whittles away. And at some point, I would say around like the maybe a minute 40 to go mark, I've already turned solidly to like, okay, I think I got to get this one to Bobby Green. He's worked his way back. And then Jim hurts him again. Mm-hmm. Miller hurts him again. And I said, listen, I know Bobby Green is having an otherwise very good round. Not just a good round, like a really good round. But he's hurt twice here. And you have to give... In my understanding and my interpretation of how you would score and my view of the fight from the television screen in my basement, I think you have to give those the benefit of the doubt more to the bigger or the heavier weight, I suppose, to those instances where Bobby Green is more hurt. He is not where he should be. Bobby Green's scoring, Miller's hurting, at least at this point in the fight. So I gave it to Miller. And I ended up in the majority. It's realistic that you could have ended up this way, even without your well-stressed biases here. You could have landed on this way in the majority, along with Chris Lee. And oh my God, we have a Tony Weeks sighting, by the way. First time this year. First time since those comments from, we don't need to dredge it up. We're already deep into so much other stuff right now, but Tony Weeks is back. Surprise. So I'm in the majority here. Bobby Green got the round from Judge David Letheby, making his way all the way out from across the pond. Out to Vegas for this one. It's totally viable to go the way. But the way I saw it, I think this is a Miller round. Which is funny because I saw some people on social media like absolutely just closed off to the idea that Jim Miller could have won the first round. And I'm like, why? Why is that? Like, this should at least be like a debate. But the idea that you cannot give this round to Jim Miller and we're going to keep receipts. Like, what? Why? Why? Ridiculous. Anyway. Round two, my man. It's not a Jim Miller round, my friend.
So this was the round where I really realized that okay, this is impossible to score a Jim Miller round. Because
a good lesson.
Because I just kept saying to myself, this ain't an eight. This ain't an eight. This ain't an eight. Jim just
But someone else said this is not an eight.
Just survive this round, Jim. And you know, next round take him down, beat him up, maybe find a sub or we just win the 29-28 decision. Mm-hmm. And two of the judges won eight. I mean, Bobby just keeps popping him and popping him. The eye is looking terrible.
Well, it's underneath the eye in particular that had already been busted open. It is just a giant bloody mask at this point. Yeah.
I mean, that was a story around in the previous round, Jim didn't land anything big. So
yes, that when you
but he was competitive.
It was.
He was fighting. He was fighting.
He is fighting, but like it. So
I can't do it.
I know. I understand. So. The majority score here was the eight. David Letheby had an eight. Tony Weeks, who is not typically giving out that eight, gave an eight. So that says a lot. Chris Lee gives a nine. Chris Lee gave a seven last year. I don't understand. I don't know. The bar for Chris Lee is just always all over the place. That drives me nuts. I don't know what his eight or his nine is. A lot of these judges, you can figure it out, but not Chris Lee. It's very inconsistent. But I had a nine here live. But I've felt like I needed to watch it again. And I watched it again, and I definitely feel much better with an 8 than I do with a 9. I had it. I wrote it down. It is what it is. I think you can still go either way, but I like an 8 here. It's not like a tough round to watch. It's just like, oof, Bobby Green, really. He outclassed him in the striking. He absolutely checks off dominance. He checks off damage like crazy. You know, is it duration? Is the duration here? I don't know. Maybe not. Duration is such a weird one. Sometimes it's very clear, and sometimes I don't think it's necessarily as clear. So I think he easily got two D's here, and that's why I can kind of go either way. I think I said what I needed to.
All right.
Round three. There is no way you're going to have any sort of opinion on this one necessarily. But like, can you at least acknowledge this is an eight?
It's
like,
not a seven.
Can you acknowledge it's an eight?
It's an eight.
Okay. All right. Which, of course, all three judges all three judges gave an eight to Bobby Green. This guy's smiling over here. When we have these scenarios, of course, the 10-7 report No. Means we must decide, is this a seven?
No.
You will say absolutely no.
Absolutely not. Jim hurt him. Mm-hmm. Jim had offense. There was no overwhelming dominance, no overwhelming because of that. So there's no overwhelming duration. And so maybe the damage is quite overwhelming.
The damage is overwhelming. But it absolutely the dominance, is.
For sure, he isn't.
Yeah.
Because you got rocked yourself.
This round, in a lot of ways, reminded me of some of those rounds against Calvin Kattar with Max Holloway. And I think only one of those rounds that we actually had watched and decided that was a seven. And I don't think it gets there. I still think I'm going to say this is an eight. But man, I'm thinking about it at least. I'm at least putting it through the rigors and being like, yo, are we there? And I don't think we did, so.
No.
This might be the most lopsided round of the year, though.
Oh, I don't think so.
What's the most lopsided round of the year?
The one we're talking about next. Might be.
All right, maybe. All right. Anyway, let's go to that one, right? Last round here, at least from UFC. Another 10-7 report situation where Zhang Wei Li gets the win over Yan Xiaonan, her countrywoman. 49-45s all around. By the way, I actually had round one as an eight. We're only talking about round two, but I had round one as an eight. Mm. That was a unanimous nine, and the reason being because, yo, I think she was basically done. So I think that checks off some overwhelming dominance in the grappling, high damage, and it was a good duration on it, too, because she had it for a long time. So I feel good about that one being an eight, even before we see her slow to get up, because obviously by then they're already writing their scores down. I was good with an eight there. Everyone wrote nine. It is what it is. We are talking about round two. And weirdly enough, I actually wrote a nine for this one. I don't know why I did that. That was just dumb. But we are talking about this as a potential 10-7, not a potential 10-9. So, Dan, the judges here are in round two. Well, the whole fight, but we're talking about round two. Mike Bell, Ben Cartledge, and Chris Lee. Obviously, somebody had talked to Mike Bell at this point and explained you can use an eight here. You know, they're allowed. I'm such a jerk. He's so likely to give these eights. Anyway, do you watch round two and say this is a seven?
Honestly, I started thinking it.
Okay.
While I was watching it.
Why?
Because she's getting pummeled. Mm-hmm. She's completely flattened out.
Yeah.
Eating shot after shot after shot. I'm like, okay, I mean, Herzog's going to stop this any second. He doesn't stop it. And then she keeps, like, backing up and then getting flattened again, eating more shots, backing up, getting flattened again, bop, 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 bop. She ate so many punches. I'm like, are we there at a seven yet? I was like, I don't really think so, because she gets up and they exchange a couple, you know, strikes on the feet. And I'm like, all right, this is just a really solid eight.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm with you, too. I think, but again, this is also a big round. Yeah. Two of the, let's put it this way, two of the biggest rounds of the year, most dominant rounds of the year, happened in the second fight of the night and then the second to last fight of the night on the same card. Wild night. Crazy night. Yeah, I don't know why I wrote nine, man. I think I'm still, like, all over the place for Max Holloway. Obviously, I was very passionate about that fight that had just happened. Like, I don't think I'd come down, so I think I'm all a mess. But anyway, it's not like my score matters. So, and incidentally, I still ended up at 49-45.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't matter. I only matter to you. And my family.
Mm.
And yeah, that's about it.
Mm.
Mm. And you, dear listener, I matter to you. I hope. Maybe I don't. That's okay. That's it for UFC 300, though, as far as the scoring. We do have one round from PFL, like I said. And this was in a fun fight. Clay Collard getting the win over Patricky Pitbull. Round two, TKO. Round one, of course, means we got a split here. So, Dan, what's happening?
I mean, Pitbull waffled him a bunch. Collard had some volume strikes, but he was fighting behind the entire time. And every time he got close, you know, to getting back, maybe even surpassing it, Pitbull waffled him again with a hard shot to pull back ahead. No doubt Pitbull was getting tired, but he definitely had the immediate impact by quite a decent margin in my eyes. So it's a 10-9 Pitbull.
Yeah, man, I had a real hard time with this one, dude, because yeah, we're talking about a situation where Pitbull really is hurting him early and not just disappearing thereafter. But I think Collard really chipped away well enough in my mind that he actually did make it up. And he's working all zones, right? He's really making it hard for Pitbull to the legs, upstairs, to the body. He's making it so Pitbull is not able to kind of just get comfortable again. He is not as comfortable as he was early on. I think he does pile it up enough overall damage to make up for the earlier problems. But yeah, it could go the other way for sure. See, I have no problem with it.
I just don't think it's early. I think he's chipping away, no doubt, the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Chip, 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 chip. And then bang. Okay, I back off against the cage. I got to reset.
Sure.
And then, okay. Bang, 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 bang. Chip, 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 chip. Bang. I'm on the mat. I'm like, oh, all right. Gets back up. Bang. Knee to the face. Hope these bangs are blowing out your eardrums.
I feel like this is one of those rounds where, like, you obviously watch the 5 minutes and you make a judgment. But when you watch what happens next, it kind of helps that you were informed by what happened before. Because, and not from a scoring perspective, but just from the sheer looking at the fight and how we got to this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything that Collar did, I think, paid off in round two.
It does pay off.
And
the thing is, the payoff's in the second round. It's not in the first round.
No. And I get so, that. I'm judging it based on round one, yeah. Right? You're writing down a number the moment the fight ends, or the round ends, excuse mm-hmm. me. And you can't go back on it. It is what it is. That's what I try to do that, you know, even though it doesn't matter. I think you can still give this one to Collard, absolutely. I have no problem with it the other way. I totally respect you going that way, but I'm okay with my score here. I'm fine with it.
I mean, I'm okay with it. I mm-hmm. mean, he does have a lot of shot. He had the volume by a lot.
Yeah.
And that's, I just think the immediate impact, especially the knockdown, some of the other shots, it just puts Pitbull over.
It's funny how much this round reminds me of Miller Green round one, actually, because it's a situation where I see the biggest stuff happening from Pitbull, but most of the stuff happening from Collard. And it's not just like, you know, volume over power, right? I think it's a little bit of both. I think both Pitbull and Collard have a little bit of the other thing too. It's interesting. I thought it was a fascinating round. I think it was a fun round. It was a fun fight. It was always going to be a fun fight. Clay Collard against any Pitbull is a fight that's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. When I say any Pitbull, I mean like one of the Pitbull brothers, probably not Andre Arlovsky. That would not be interesting. Against a dog, I don't want to see that either. But like, but these guys, probably Thiago Pitbull Alves too could also be interesting.
At some point in his career.
Not anymore. Thiago, stay out. Don't fight anymore. Just coach. Be coach. It's fine. But yeah, you agree in the majority, I should point out, with Derek Cleary and Sal D'Amato. I saw it the same way as Ben Cartlidge, who also... All right. Made it across the pond. And that is it for contested rounds. A lot of finishes, sir. Oh, my goodness. 10 finishes from PFL. 6 by TKO or KO. 4 by sub. 6 of these fights ended in the first round. From UFC, we had 8 finishes out of 13. 10 of 11 out of PFL, by the way. That was nuts. 5 of the fights were strikes-based, TKO or KO. 3 submissions and 2 fights ended in the first round. All told, 18 finishes to pick from across 2 days. I know you missed most of the PFL ones, though, so you're really limiting your range here. Wow. Nonetheless, amazing stuff to pick from in UFC. I'm taking Holloway out of the equation. Well, we already gushed over it. I don't want to do it anymore. Another time I'll gush over it, but let's give some shine to something else. What was your favorite finish other than Holloway?
Davison Figueiredo, rear naked choke, Cody Garbrandt.
Mm.
Solid. And he almost arm triangled him before that.
He kind of had his way with him after a little while. It was competitive. The first round, Garbrandt wins the round. He fights smart.
Yes.
Like un-Garbrandt-like. Like harkening back to the Dominic Cruz fight where he fought really smart.
Yeah.
And somehow managed to do this for 5 rounds, and those were, up until this point, the only 5 rounds that he ever fought smart. More or less. but yeah, eventually Figgy's just better. He just is. So I like that one too.
And yours?
Alex Pereira. Closing out the show. The whole sequence here is just so fascinating to me. Pereira takes a low blow, kick to the groin. Herb Dean walks in like he's going to try and give him a break. Pereira, without even looking, is just like, nah, hold up, bro. I got this. It's okay. Let me cook. He just freaking boops Jamal Hill and it's over.
Yeah.
It's like he like barely touches him. I mean, it's not a one-hitter quitter, but like Hill is bad right now. He's out, kind of crunched up against the cage. Not quite sure exactly where he is. And Pereira follows up all within like 10 seconds. This is like just the craziest sequence for me. Yeah. And then he does the whole like, hey, look what I did here. Look what I made. Like, what was that?
They used the animation from Mike Tyson's punch out for the knockout. That's how Jamal Hill tipped over.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be good. But that's next to Max Holloway. That is just such an indelible memory from this event. Again, Dana, I don't agree with everything Dana White says, but in the sense that he believes he sells holy yes moments, or his product does, the fighters are the ones who get it done. But in this case, he sold two really great ones. And when I say sold, I mean they were put on the pay-per-view card and you had to buy them.
He did say, though, that the crowd was dead for the final two fights.
You know what? And he's right. And I'm glad you brought this up, actually. There was one more thing I wanted to talk about with Max Holloway and this whole thing. If you are going to put a fight in there that you believe is going to just rock the house, you can't do it right before your two main fights. Because it sucks everything out. Do it at the beginning. Do that one like they did with Justin Gaethje and was it Dustin Poirier or Michael Chandler? I can't remember. Or is it Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler?
I think
Chandler?
It was Dustin and Chandler.
Yeah. That whole triumvirate has fought a bunch of times, right? But the one in New York, right?
Yeah.
They moved that one down the card, not for that purpose, but because they wanted to break it up for Trevor Whitman, who was going to be in everyone's corner. Which was... you know, a nice and thoughtful way to do it. But it also had the same effect that I'm talking about here. It's like you started off with a bang, right? Mm-hmm. You get everybody in. And anyone who didn't already purchase the pay-per-view, maybe they hear about it, they're like, all right, yo, I'm dialing in. It's early. I can still catch everything else. I can go back and watch that thing I missed too. And that's wild, right? Why are you putting that there? Because it does suck everything out. Just put a couple other fights that are important after that one. And then you build back up again. You know? If everyone just let me rule the world, I'm telling you, things would work out. I would be a benevolent leader. You should make me your leader. We'll start with the UFC and then we'll expand from there. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you, man. But that is it. That's UFC 300 in the books, man. We're not doing a whole numbered event until like 8 years from now. And it might end up being, I was doing the calculations trying to figure out, it's probably going to be in the fall, like late fall, if they go at their same pace. Maybe 400 would be in New York.
All right, so I'll be how old by then? Maybe I'll hit the lottery by then?
Yeah, probably.
All right.
Just put aside a dollar every day.
Okay.
If you put aside a dollar every day, you will have almost enough money
my UFC,
in 8 years.
My UFC 400 fund.
I like it. You should do it.
Dollar a day.
Do that. A dollar a day.
All right, we'll see.
Oh, I think that'd be fun. But yeah, so that's in the rear view. We're now looking ahead to... easily the second biggest weekend of the year. PFL 3 on Friday.
Yay.
That's it. There's no UFC this week. They took a break, and I think that was good. But it's a 10 p.m. main card. You want to check that out. It's there. We have the 170-pounders and the 145-pounders are in the mix this week. I don't know if you are interested in either of these fields. I think there's some pretty solid fields. Realistically, there's some good fighters on here. 170, you got Andre Koroshkov, Goichi Yamauchi, Neiman Gracie, Brennan Ward. There's
no,
some
thank
fun
you.
Ones.
I'll have a Minotaur.
Dan was watching Role Models when I came in and we're ready to record, so he's going to go back to that. Are you sure you're not interested in Logan Storley?
Actually, I am a little bit. See if he puts a little more oomph into those knees. Now, Brennan Ward is usually fun. I don't know who Don Madge is.
He's always fun. He's always fun.
He is.
What is he not fun?
I mean, he's always fun. But I don't know about Don Madge. I don't know who that is.
Well, he's coming up from lightweight. He hasn't fought in a while. I believe he's a UFC veteran. Okay. Or maybe he's... the name is familiar. I actually am less familiar than I thought I was. But and then, of course, 45. We got Brendan Loughnane. He's in the mix. Kai Kamaka, who you know I always like him. I'm interested to see how he would do in this field. There's some real good matchups here. I think he's ready for Adam Borich, Enrique Barzola, Brett Johns. I think 45 is really interesting.
That is.
Do you have any favorites in these?
I was gonna go with Gabriel Braga.
That's okay. Coming off of last year where he was the runner up. Fighting with a very heavy heart this year. His father was murdered.
Jesus.
Yeah. You didn't hear about that?
I did not know about
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, his father was murdered in January. It was, it seems like it was sort of a case of mistaken identity in a sense. He was trying to find his stolen motorcycle, and people mistook him as like a rival gang member, and
oh
they
my
killed
God.
Him.
Jesus.
Yeah, well, as the story goes out of authorities, but it sounds like this is like, there's no conspiracy theory. Like, this is what happened.
Wow.
Horrible.
That is horrible.
Just horrifying. So, and his father was a fighter too.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Friends with Patricio Pitbull. Mm. They're all in the same kind of group there. So he's certainly the emotional favorite. How do you not root for someone to overcome a really horrible, horrible, horrible way to start your year to maybe end it in a really nice way and maybe can make some positive change in his neighborhood with that if he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
What about at 170? You got a favorite?
I'm actually going to go with Storley.
Okay. You think he'll win that one?
Yeah.
I am going to pick Magomed Umaleitov.
All right.
That's where I'm going. But we'll hopefully have some fun Brendan Ward along the way.
Yes.
And this, by the way, this is also in Chicago, so we'll have judges working out of Illinois. Usually they end up for those events having officials coming into town for that. I hope it being such close proximity to Wisconsin, maybe we'll see the likes of Rick Winter and that other judge that some people hear the name of once in a while. maybe that'll happen.
The score of the night.
PFL does not do that. No, you're fighting for $1 million at the end of the season. That's what you're fighting for.
Yeah.
So maybe by the end of the season, the best judge of the season would then get the $1 million prize as a judge.
Honestly, do you think it would be bad to tweak their score? Like, say someone just can't get the finish, but they got like 2 10-8 rounds. That should be worth more than three points, don't you think?
I think I like that. It would have to be like a majority. Yeah, like you're saying, like 2 or 3 out of it. Maybe you can earn an extra point.
Yeah.
I think that'd be interesting.
Be a good tiebreaker, too.
It would be a good tiebreaker. But see, this is the same promotion that said, we're not going to do elbows. So, you know, not always the best ideas, unfortunately. I could go on and on. We've already had a long, long, long show. But more or less, there's things I like about PFL. And there's so many things where I'm like, what are you doing? What's the plan? Why? Elbows!
All right, we'll be back, I guess, next week for PFL Tour 3.
Well, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Of course we're going to be back. Yeah. We're always back.
Yeah, we're back.
Yeah.
Actually, I do think these fights might be fun.
I think it's going to be a good card, man. Suck it up. This is fun.
I won't be able to watch live, but I guess I'll have to tune in after.
Yeah, we'll get there.
All right, thanks for listening.
Take care, everybody.